Skagway and Haines residents tell legislators directly what they think of proposed budget cuts. And a new exhibit at the Sheldon Museum tells stories about food in America. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. The state is facing a $3.5 billion operating budget deficit next year. The Senate Finance Committee has proposed funding cuts to help deal with that shortfall. This week, residents from all over Alaska testified to the Senate Finance Committee on those proposed cuts. About 10 Skagway and Haines residents advocated for the ferry system, the Haines Forestry Office, and public broadcasting. Skagway residents who testified were most concerned about securing funding for the Alaska Marine Highway. Tyler Rose is a director at the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad.
Reductions in service with such cancellations of patrons in-hand reservations and the effects that go with that will be an undue hardship not only to our businesses, but also a blight to the reputation of our state in the worldwide travel and tour community.
Beth Smith is a Skagway business owner. She told the Finance Committee, "We need more ferries, not fewer."
The Skagway winter economy is very challenging already, and the ferry generates much-needed business throughout the months. I can't tell you how difficult it would be to reduce the ferry in the winter months here.
In Haines, several people testified against cuts that would shut down the Haines State Forestry Office and eliminate the positions of two local foresters. Scott Rossman owns a small logging company in Haines.
I am alarmed at the decision to cut the forester positions in the Haines State Forest. This action will effectively put me out of business along with about six other small operators here who depend on the Haines State Forest as the sole source of their timber for their businesses.
Brenda Josephson, whose husband is one of two local foresters, testified that without a Haines forestry office in charge of maintaining logging roads, Haines residents would lose access to the forest. Haines resident Deborah Schnabel and KHNS Development Director Sarah Chapel testified against cuts to public broadcasting. KHNS is one of many public radio stations around the state that would be impacted by proposed cuts. Once the Senate Finance Committee is done with their budget proposal, it will go to the full Senate for approval. Another gold mine upstream from southeast Alaska is a step closer to opening. British Columbia recently granted provisional environmental approval to the Bruce Jack project. It's much smaller than some other transboundary mining projects, but critics say they still have concerns. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Bruce Jack mine site is about 25 miles from the Alaska border and about 85 miles east of Wrangell. It's within the watershed of the Unuk River, which drains into the ocean northeast of Ketchikan. It's adjacent to the KSM, one of the more controversial transboundary mining projects, but it's much smaller and won't use a tailings dam.
Bruce Jack is a high-grade underground gold project, and it's at the advanced exploration stage.
Michelle Romero is Vice President of Corporate Relations for Pretium Resources, the mine's Vancouver-based owner. She says the high concentration of gold negates the need for open pit operations. It also reduces the amount of tailings, the waste rock left over after processing. About half those tailings will be used to backfill mine tunnels. The other half will be placed into nearby Bruce Jack Lake.
There's no built structure. There is no tailings dam. Nothing that can fail because we are using an existing natural lake.
Romero says the lake is frozen much of the year because of its high elevation. Environmental documents show it has no fish. The provincial permit awarded March 26th is not the final step in government review.
We would wait for the federal permit, and then that will enable us to begin construction.
Bruce Jack's owners say that will take about 2 years and about $750 million Canadian. A Chinese mining group recently bought into the project, though further financing is needed. Bruce Jack is uphill from the Kerr Sulphurets Mitchell project, a lower-grade multi-metal mine owned by Toronto-based Seabridge Gold. Critics of BC mines near transboundary rivers say the much larger KSM has the potential to pollute watersheds of two rivers that reach the ocean within 50 miles of Ketchikan.
This clearly isn't a mine the size of KSM or with the type of tailings dams and the amount of tailings.
Chris Zimmer is Alaska campaign director for Rivers Without Borders. He says British Columbia is approving too many mines much too fast without enough consideration of the safety of salmon in those rivers.
We still don't see safeguards to protect our interests downstream. And BC is just rubber stamping these mine proposals as fast as they can here.
Southeast Alaska Conservation Council spokesman David Hafey points to a report issued after last year's disastrous Mount Polly mine tailings dam collapse in east central BC.
When asked about dry stacking, an alternative to submerging tailings in water, the owners of Bruce Jack said it would just be too expensive to do that. And so that seems to contradict the Mount Polly report.
The KSM has already been approved by federal and provincial environmental agencies, and BC's government recently okayed limited operations at the Red Chris mine. It's on a tributary of the Stikeen River, which enters the ocean near Petersburg and Wrangell. SEAC, Rivers Without Borders, and other Alaska groups are pushing for the projects to go before a U.S.-Canada panel that reviews cross-border water issues. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
The Sheldon Museum is digging into the Chilkat Valley's unique history of and relationship with food. It's a local side dish to the entree that is Key Ingredients, a traveling Smithsonian exhibit. The Key Ingredients exhibit is made up of seven sleek panels that explore food in America, everything from table manners to Thanksgiving to food in different cultures. Alongside the Smithsonian panels, there are artifacts that tell stories about food in Haines. Here's curator Andrea Nelson.
We are emphasizing the large role that subsistence foods and wild plants and animals have in our diet, not just as a novelty, but as a real part of our sustenance here, and something we take very seriously.
The museum will display jarred foods from seal meat to blueberry jam. There are also historical items from their collection, like some worn-out berry-picking baskets.
They're working baskets, and you can see it in them. They're beaten up. They're stained. You can see actual berry stains on them. You can see where the handles broke. They're just living artifacts that have a history.
Nelson talked about how this exhibit has a sort of juxtaposition between the sleek, professional Smithsonian displays and the more gritty objects from Haines.
When I work with like the jars of food and the old fishing nets and the objects from around here, they've just got a lot of soul, and it reminds me of how physical Alaska is. How we're not this like flat, manufactured, clean package of, but just we get our hands dirty, and the product is beautiful.
And if that doesn't make you feel proud of Haines, listen to this story about how the Smithsonian exhibit got here. Museum director Helen Alton says she was looking for exhibits, and she found that Key Ingredients was traveling around Alaska, and it was going to end in Fairbanks.
I called the Smithsonian and I said, is there any chance you've got this exhibit up here already? Is there any chance we can get it, and what would it take to get it? And they said, well, we can't afford to transport it down to you. And they said, if you can get it from Fairbanks, you can have it.
When local farmer and assembly member George Campbell heard about the dilemma,
he said, I'll go up and get it. And he went up on Thanksgiving. Talk about food. They didn't eat Thanksgiving. They drove up to Fairbanks and got the exhibit on Thanksgiving and drove back, he and his wife. And we paid for the housing and the mileage, but we didn't pay for their time.
That kindness might not only benefit this exhibit, but future ones. Since the Sheldon Museum is the last stop for the traveling Smithsonian panels, the museum gets to keep them.
We're thinking about how can we reach out. Our community here in Haines is so small. How can we reach out and bring Haines to the world? And one way is through traveling exhibits. And I was, I've been thinking about taking some of our stories on the road.
Alton says the Smithsonian panels could be stripped of their food information and filled with Haines information. She says it makes the idea of the traveling Haines exhibit more likely to happen. Key Ingredients opens on Friday with a potluck at the museum from 4 to 6. Alton is planning food-related events throughout the summer. The exhibit will be on display in the downstairs area of the museum until October. Alton is also looking for volunteer docents for Key Ingredients. Docents are guides who talk about the exhibit with visitors. They'll be able to give summer tourists a first-person perspective on the foods that fill Haines. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.